on 1116 SEN. Anthony Mundine, the interview with Tony Sheehan and Mark Allen.
Good evening, folks. I'm Mark Allen. Anthony Mundine is a controversial and some say misunderstood champion in Australian sport. A two-time WBA middleweight world champion and IBO middleweight world championship holder amongst many boxing accolades. Before boxing, he was a superstar of the NRL and its highest paid player. Tonight, Tony Sheehan and I chat to the man, Anthony Mundine.
I might chip out, man. I got this, yeah.
Well, once again, good afternoon, folks, and welcome to An Hour with Anthony Mundine. First of all, Tony Sheehan, nice to see you, Tone.
Marco, great to be back on the air.
Pleasure. Anthony, thanks for making your trip down to Melbourne and joining us for this hour of radio.
All good, my man. I love Melbourne City, man.
Hey, before we talk about the last 10 days, the last 9 or 10 days, that's important. That's a lot of the reason why you're on tonight. I thought it's really appropriate. I think a lot of people forget when you turned professional as a fighter, just after an NRL career, got to the level you did in the NRL. I mean, you were a superstar of the competition, playing State of Origin, the whole lot. Highest paid player.
I believe I was the best 5'8 in my time. And my stats and every head-to-head, proved that, you know.
Chalk, just remind the listeners how many games of NRL you played, and it was with St. George and Brisbane, correct?
Yeah, St. George and Brisbane, I played all up, probably played close to 150 games NRL over, you know, period of 5.5, 6 years.
Yeah.
Played most of them with St. George Dragons, and then it merged in 99 to St. George Illawarra. But in 97, the Super League year, I signed with the Brisbane Broncos for that year.
Tell me this, because, you know, you delve a little deeper into your career and your time as a sportsman. Only 4 amateur fights, and they weren't, you know, any time around that NRL career, which we see a lot of, you know, fighters these days are jumping in. 4 amateur fights when you were 16.
Yeah, I had 4 amateur fights. I wanted to have a few fights when I was younger, and, you know, my dad didn't, you know, had a problem with Arthur Tunsil that run the association.
Yeah.
So we went to amateur called the league. It was amateur league.
Right.
It just started off. It's pretty big now. But just started off then, and we got some fights in New Caledonia. We didn't even fight in Australia. I fought over there, and I was fighting fully grown men.
With headgear? 16.
Yeah, headgear. But yeah. I was 16. They were probably 20.
So what gets me is you turn pro at age 25 in 2000. Mm. 1 year of fighting, and you find yourself in a bout with Sven Otke. Now, you do the Google search on Sven Otke. He's retired undefeated. He's going to go straight into the Boxing Hall of Fame at some stage. He had over 300 amateur fights. So you had 4 professional fights and find yourself in a ring this character.
Yeah, I had 4 amateur fights when I was 16. Then I had 10 professional
fights.
10
professional fights.
Before I fought Otke. By right, by law, I really shouldn't have been in the ring with him. I shouldn't have had, you know, the right to be in the ring. But I was cocky. I was confident. And for them 10 rounds that I did, fighting, I was winning the fight, you know, but my seasoning and my condition, because I wasn't, you know, experienced enough, let me down.
You lost that fight, like you say, but it was his 12th defense of a world title.
Yes,
and only your 10th fight.
Yeah, 12th defense of his IBF World Championship. So he defended his belt 12 times, and then it was only my 10th or 11th fight when I fought him, and man, like, looking back, I think, I must have been crazy, man.
That couldn't happen. I mean, if you did it again, if you went back, would you wait another year before you jumped in the ring with someone like that?
Yeah, definitely. I probably waited another year, but I was just so eager and so had that belief in myself that I wanted to be champion. I was so eager to make my dream a reality.
But wasn't it one of your greatest learning experiences fighting Sven Otke?
Oh, definitely. I think it was, you know, you gain from a loss too. You win. You actually win out of a loss, and I think that just made me that much more hungrier. It made me that much more, my desire that much more stronger. It made me work harder. You know, when I fought Sven Otke, I mean, when I fought Antoine Eccles a year and a half later, you know, I knew that, you know, that I wasn't going to let that moment slip.
Yeah.
Was it worse than the fact that it was on foreign soil over in Germany?
Not really. I mean, it takes a lot of guts and to go over to somebody's backyard. Because you're pretty much looked at as the opponent. Mm. You know, not, you know, he's a champion. So they're gonna have to, you know, knock him out to get a draw kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
What about the fight against Mikael Kessler as well? I mean, I remember being in a pub watching that fight. Absolutely packed. I mean, every pub in Melbourne was packed when he took on this character.
Yeah.
He's a four-time...
He was a machine, like, Marco.
An absolute... he's another one who's going to go straight in.
Yeah.
And everyone in that pub, like, that I spoke to, they were cheering for you. Mm. And the performance you put up against this character, going the distance with this man.
Yeah.
How do you view that one?
That was a close fight. That was one of my better fights, I think. That really showed people that come of age in the boxing game, and I was for real. Kessler was a, you know, 6'1", muscly, tattooed beast.
Experienced.
Yeah, experienced, and he had a great amateur pedigree as well. So, to perform the way, another 10%, I reckon I would have beat him. But it was definitely a great champion, and you know, he proved that, you know, to go on and win more titles and do what he done in the sport.
Chock, Mikael Kessler, you spoke of his brilliance in boxing. He was the best super middleweight in the world when you fought him, is that right?
Yeah, he was one of the best, if not the best at the time. He was a scary character. And I was fighting, people don't know, I was fighting up in weight.
Mm.
You know, I fought at super middleweight because I was a league player, which I was pretty buffy around 84 to 86 kilograms. But when I shredded that down to super middleweight, but as I trained and trained and trained, if I would have stayed in boxing for my amateur career, the heaviest I would have been is a middleweight.
So super middleweight, just for those who don't know, is 76 kilos, correct?
76.2. And then I went down to middleweight, which is 72.5. Then I went down again to super welterweight, which is 69.85.
For which fights?
I fought Sugar Shane Mosley at super middleweight, super welterweight.
Hatley
at super welterweight. I've had probably 5-6 fights at super welterweight, and that was my last fight. Jumped from Hatley to Green, and that's 13 kilos. I come up to 83.
That's Green, first Green.
Yeah, before we get on to Green, just going back to being at super middleweight and then middleweight and below that, you looked awfully gaunt, unhealthy, and really thin in the face, despite the fact that you wanted to fight amongst all those divisions.
But I just wanted to try and make the biggest fight. I wanted to get the biggest fight and the best fighters, and the best fighters were down at that weight.
You know at middleweight?
And super welterweight.
Mm. Is that, what's Floyd Walter, Mayweather?
Welterweight, super welterweight. You could have, you know, big fight with Mayweather. Pac-Man's even fought at super welterweight. Had Margarito at the time. Yeah. Shane Mosley.
Yep.
You had like big names, man.
So
big,
you had you had serious ambitions to fight the big boys in the States.
Oh, definitely. That's what I wanted. I just wanted that one chance. But you know, when my opportunity came, a lot of people don't know I was battling a hip injury for 6-7 years, and it was gradually getting worse and worse and worse every 3-4 months, and I had osteoarthritis.
Mm.
You got really close to fighting in the States. I remember you were meeting with Kota Nassi, your manager and longtime ally. We were in Los Angeles at the time, and you left to go with Russell Crowe, Kota Nassi, to meet with Oscar De La Hoya in Los Angeles about organising a big bout over there. I mean, that's how close you became.
Yeah, it was pretty close. Well, I've been trying to get the big fights, over there and get. That's what I yearned, you know. That's what I wanted to get up for, because I've become champion. I've done what I said what I was going to do. And I just wanted to fight the best fighters in the world.
Look, we know how much you've accomplished. You are an absolute superstar. But have you? I hate to use the word wasted, but have you wasted your opportunity about not going to the States and fighting more there?
Not really. I think, you know, looking back, I would have probably went there a bit earlier, you know, not after I won the championship, I should have went. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a prize fighter. You know what I mean? Everybody's a prize fighter. And if you can fight in your backyard, and get that advantage, that's great too. But I definitely search for them fights and try to make them fights happen. But for one reason or another, that didn't happen. I thought, obviously fought some great names as well. Yeah. Especially Sugar Shane Mosley, a living legend.
Yeah,
absolutely. And got the job done there in 6 rounds.
Yeah.
That's right. I still can't get past the fact you started boxing at 25. That's the one that...
Good pedigree.
Your speed and your movement in the ring is undeniable. It just is. If you had that amateur career, if you had the 50 amateur fights, if you started your professional career at 20, 21, how big a difference would that, have made?
Probably would have made a bit of difference. You know, I had that experience behind me coming into the pro ranks. But pretty much I was learning on the job. When I started my professional career. Mm. But I've always had a dream, always knew when from a young age, from 8, 7, 8, 9 years old, that I was going to make it in footy and that then I was going to go to boxing. I didn't know when, but when the system treated me sort of unjustly, that's when I decided to go.
When you say unjustly, what happened?
Just, everyone knows me. I'm a very straightforward, I shoot from the hips type dude. I talk the truth. I stand up for my people's plight. I talk about a lot of stuff that people are afraid to talk about.
Mm.
And I cause division.
I want to talk about that a little later in the hour. Just a question off the SMS before we go to our first break and come back and talk about what's happened in the last 10 days.
Oh, the big 10 days, Marco.
It's been a big 10 days. What's more intimidating, getting into the ring with someone like, Sven Otke and Mikael Kessler, or 120-kilogram prop coming at you the other way?
Oh, man. Probably the 100-kilogram prop, man. I mean, I'm pretty cool now. I'm pretty cool, calm, collected when I fight. But definitely when a big guy's running at you like that, I'm probably, 85, when I'm playing league, 85 kilos, ringing wet. When they bump you, bro, you're like a speed bump.
Hey, Chock, do you have any regrets in regards to timing and doing things differently? Had you have your time again?
Nah, I don't have no regrets. I think that everything happens for a reason. I believe that my career is, can be arguably one of the better careers in Australian boxing.
Without doubt.
I believe, my legacy as far as league and boxing, it's never been done. It's, my crossover sport has never been done, never before, never again. That's my motto, man. Like, people don't give me that credit. I'll probably get that credit 10, 12, 15 years, 20 years down the line when they realise, I was something,
Yeah, that's what I wanted to make plain in this first segment. Look, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the last 10 days.
We can't wait to talk about Anthony Mundine, Danny Green.
On 1116 SEN, Anthony Mundine, the interview with Tony Sheehan and Mark Allen.
Welcome back to 1116 SEN. Mark Allen here with Tony Sheehan. Anthony Mundine made the trip down from Sydney just to be here for the hour. The last 9 days, Anthony. I've read plenty about the decision. A lot of people, I would say 90% of the callers who consider themselves boxing fans, say that you won the fight.
Yeah, man, I believe so too, man. Like, it's just, if you watch, you got to watch the fight closely and clearly. I landed the clean shots. My jab was sticking him all night, and he didn't land anything. I wasn't hurt once in the fight, and I know I hurt him a few times in the fight.
Mm.
And my clean punches were, I was landing cleaner punches.
Right. So what about the judge who scored at 98 to 90? Well, should he ever get a job in the, being a judge ever again? I mean, that was outrageous.
I mean, that's just, if something shady was to happen, at least the other two judges sort of played it safe, where this judge just blatantly, looked like to me was a robbery,
Yeah, so there's an appealing process.
He came in with the ski mask and just took all the money.
Hey, Marco, why don't we just out this
Go on.
This judge, Hubert Min from Hawaii. How could you judge Anthony's scorecard at 98-90? Chock, what the hell is going on?
Well, mate, it's not the first time it's happened in the sport. And stuff like that really discredits boxing and puts people off boxing. And, you know, everyone saw it for themselves. I watched the fight a number of times now, replayed.
How many?
Probably three or four. And I clearly won the fight. Like, 7-3, I believe, to me. But if you want to be biased, I think it's 6-4 to me, hands down.
So tell us about the process. What happens? The fight's obviously sent to three individual judges, and they have another look and come back. And if it does fall your way, what happens?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. My team, you know, which includes Brian Armatruder from here in Melbourne, great boxing promoter, does great things for the boxing down here. Him and Mick Gatto,
support
boxing big. He's putting something together, and I think it goes in tomorrow, and hopefully we'll hear something by Tuesday.
What's Brian putting in?
I don't think it's an official appeal, but it's like I'm not sure if it's a summary or something to do with the fight, and
this is on your behalf?
On my behalf, yes.
We had Denny Green on during the week, and I asked him about the punch when the referee had Denny's arms and it got him, and he was really good about it, actually. Denny said, look, that's what happens in boxing. That's what happens.
It wasn't a foul. That's because it wasn't a foul.
Yeah, I want to hear it from him. He said that his arm was hooked by the ref, and then the punch came. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
I saw an opportunity, man, and the ref didn't say break. He didn't say stop. He just said let him go. And, you know, I just saw an opportunity. As soon as I saw the opportunity, you know, your chance, get a punch out, it's like a camouflage.
Yeah.
You know, when you see an opening. So it's there 1 minute, then it's gone. So as soon as I saw it, I took it.
Chock, did that give you, and I know a lot of people say it was a foul, did that give you confidence or did that dent you confidence at that time?
No, it was a fight, you know. It's going to fight. Like, you're told before you come out to the ring, protect yourself at all times, unless I say stop or break. And I never heard one of them words.
Yeah. So if the ref has made a mistake there, if the ref didn't say stop, if he didn't say it, did Denny Green get enough time to recover from a blow like that? Because he said it rocked him. He said on our program on Monday that he felt concussed.
I think Denny just going over the top with it because I feel he wants to try and give himself every opportunity. Because of the outcome of the fight, you know what I mean? I mean, obviously he got the decision, but, fighters know within themselves, within their heart, within their soul, you know, if they're winning or losing. I know I won that fight.
So are you accusing him of taking a dive?
It looked like, you watch the professional soccer players play.
Yeah, we all do, yeah.
And I get kicked in the shins and I go down for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. It's like that. It reminded me of something like that.
But, Chock, don't understate the fierceness of your punch. That left hook to his jaw rocked him.
Yeah, I caught him pretty good, but I could have caught him cleaner. I didn't catch him super clean. But I'm not saying I didn't, you know. I probably did rock him and dazed him a bit. But the way he went on was the theatrics he went on with. It was just, for me, it was a bit funny.
Righto. So you don't come down from Sydney to talk like this. What's behind it? What do you want to happen? What do you want to see happen with all this? Are we talking about Green Mundine 3? What are we doing?
Listen, he knows he never won the fight. I know he never won the fight. People don't see that behind the work stuff. I prepared 6 months for that fight in my body. I had to put on 13 kilos. I couldn't even make the weight. I was coming at 79. Mm. Couldn't even make the weight, 83. And, and to be gypped like that and be robbed like that, it just breaks your heart, man. And, yeah, of course I want number three. I want to whip his ass, man. And this time, you know, I really feel that I can hurt him bad in the last fight. And I want to put an end to his career.
Well, after you've said that, Denny Green did speak to us on the Monday and he gave us his view about the decision. I want you to have a listen.
His corner was screaming out. They were so desperate and they were so worried and they were so, whatever the word is, they were freaking out. You could hear him screaming, you got to win this last corner massive. You got this last round. You have to win this last round. Big jock. Basically saying you're going to knock this bloke out to win. That was his corner. And after the fight, his father, his pelican mates are jumping up and down and going, and his father said, shut the boys, or big fight. Mm. Won that fight. He won the fight, you know. So that's coming from his dad. His dad, his own dad, told my trainer, my strength trainer, Ray Franklin, your boy won the fight.
Danny Green on the run home on Monday.
That's some bullshit, man. That's some bullshit. You know, you seen that movie? Bullshit, Mr. Hang, man. Anyway.
Chalk, tell
Green,
us what...
Green, he's just clutching at straws, man. Now, my dad would never say that. My dad, I spoke to my dad about this. He said, yes, I did congratulate him. My dad's a good guy, you know. Mm. Real humble, real pious, top of dude. He congratulated on the victory and them after being announced. But he never one moment said that Green won the fight. Like, my dad know who won the fight. He told me after, in the sheds after. He goes, you know, that happens in boxing. We won, but that happens, you know.
Is it because it was your last fight? Is this the reasoning that you're upset and come down? I mean, I would be. I mean, if it's my last fight ever, or my last whatever, and I got gypped in something, I would be filthy.
Man, everyone knows, you know, like 90% of the people that know boxing know that I won the fight. Even his fans were coming up to me after the fight saying, I won the fight. You know, I'm a Green fan, but you deserve that fight. You won that fight. And I'm not talking one, two people. I'm talking everybody I run into. You know, what I'm trying to do is, I just want to, you know, he's going to be living with, it's been 10 years since our, since 10, 11 years since our first fight. He's going to be living with, after the first fight, he's going to be living, when are you going to get Mundine again? When are you going to get Mundine again? Now, he's going to be living with, you know, indecisiveness. Yep. People are, I say, oh, well, you, most of them are going to say, you lost that fight, but it's a good fight. You know what I mean? Yep. Let's have a number three.
Yeah.
And then I'll show you the real deal. I was gone a year and a half. I had to lay off a year and a half because I had major hip surgery. And
yep.
You need to be active. He fought 4 months ago against Kane Watts.
Yeah.
Here in Melbourne. And now I've got the cobwebs out. I'll just make a couple little adjustments. I will destroy him, man. He ain't on my level. And all he wanted to do in the fight was hit and hold. Grab. Every time I come close, he wanted to grab and hit.
Mm.
He got warned over a dozen times for it until the ref finally took a point off. Then after that, he kept doing it and never got punished for it. I want to get a good ref that lets us fight on the inside, lets us fight on the outside, and... You know, if we do tie up and get for too long, then break us up. But let us fight.
Mm.
You know, you got one hand free, let's throw it. I'm too skillful for him on the inside. I'm too skillful for him on the outside. I'm too skillful, period, for him.
Jock, actions speak louder than words. How serious are you about Mundine Green 3 with 10 days gone since your second bout with Danny Green?
I'm very serious. I'm very serious.
How serious?
Very serious. I'm ready to go. 50-50. Like the last fight, and let's do it. I'll fight him in Perth. I've been thinking long and hard about this. I want to beat him and whip him and hurt him in his own backyard and his own home in Perth. So all his family can come, all his friends can come, and witness him getting fried.
If you do fight in Perth, would there be a trade off in weight more in your favour? Do you think if the fight was in his backyard? Do you think he'd get
we do it again.
Something.
We do it again. 83 again.
83 again.
83 again.
83 again in Perth.
83 again in Perth, baby. Let's get it done.
What did Danny fight at, Chalk? Wait, when you went into the ring...
He would have been 88 to 90, not easy.
What were you, 83?
I was not 79.
Really?
In the ring. 10 kilos, no problem. But fighters like me can deal with that. Only the best can deal with that.
What do you say... To people like Jeff Fenwick, who also came on. I mean, the fight got a lot of media attention on this radio station. Jeff Fenwick came on. We saw him in the papers. He came on and said it was dangerous for you to be in Green Mundine 2.
Yep, that stuff is good for me because that just makes me want to prove it that much more that it is possible. Like, I'm about making the impossible possible. You know what I mean? I'm about making the... uncomfortable, comfortable.
Mm. Yeah.
Chalk, after the fight on Main Event pay-per-view Fox Sports, which went around the world, particularly Australia, you were seen in an embrace with a mate of yours who was hugging you around the neck, and you were in tears. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, that wasn't even about, the fight. That's the crazy thing. They make an album crying and sucking about the fight. That wasn't even about the fight. My dear friend Michael Dickey, one of my best fans, from the get go, been to pretty much every one of my fights. He embraced me and said, "Man, you it was, you know, talking with conviction, saying, man, you saved my life. You saved my life." Because people don't understand. This guy went through depression, was going to commit suicide. He said to me, if it wasn't for you, Chuck, I wouldn't be here. You saved my life, man. And I'm a very sort of...
Emotional
type character, man. You know, I cry in movies and stuff. when he said that...
Chuck, don't say that publicly.
when he said that to me, I was like, damn, he got me, man. Yeah. I couldn't hold back the tears.
Don't go set line anytime soon then. It's a tough one to get through.
Chuck, and we know you were emotional with your mate Michael Dickey, and our thoughts go out to him, but... Take us through your thoughts from when you left the ring after the decision all the way through the night as to not, you obviously weren't grieving, but how did you process the decision?
Oh man, it's just, you know, I've been getting pretty much jacked up, you know, my whole career, even in my league days, you know, with the national teams, with the system always trying to defeat me. I don't know, man. I just
Is this decision part of that?
Beg yours?
Is this decision part of that?
What this year?
The fight against Danny Green.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I believe, you know, I stand for the truth, man. I fight injustice. I speak the truth, and when you speak the truth's like a rock. It's like a rock, and when you throw it into a pack of dogs, the one that it hits will bark the loudest.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I've had the system barking a lot of times.
Yeah.
Marco, sorry just to interrupt. I just want to take you back. How did you feel after the loss? Have you come to terms with it?
Nah, well, I'm content with it because I didn't lose. Like, I know I didn't lose. If I knew I lost, and in my heart I knew I lost, I'm a man. I speak the truth. I say, yeah, he beat me. You know, it's good. Good on him. But he never beat me, man. He never beat me. You know, and he's got to live with that, not me.
Are you filthy with all the press that's happened in the wake of the loss and where Danny's come out on the night in the ring and praised you, and then ever since that, he's SHIT canned you?
Well, mate, I think that I hit him that hard and that often that he's been missing a few. For his screws now. No, man.
His face didn't look good after the fight.
Well, my face wasn't marked up. You know what I mean? I had a couple of little marks from the glove up top, but I never had no bruising. I never had no puffiness around my eyes. My nose wasn't broke or claret wasn't coming out of it. Man, I was busting him up. And we should have went 12 rounds because that's what champions do. They go 12 rounds.
Why didn't you go 12?
I don't know, man. Probably because Danny wanted it.
Tell me this. Before the fight, there was controversy that you weren't going to be in the ring when the national anthem was being played. And that's your decision. And it's not because of disrespect. It's because you don't like the lyrics of the national anthem.
No,
and
there are lots
of people who don't like the lyrics of the national anthem.
It's not just the lyrics. It's what's the lyrics stand for, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And no, I get it. I get what you mean when you say it. I do. And I know you applied for your people.
People ain't educated on the anthem. Anthem was coming around, I don't know, I think the late, I don't know when it was compiled, but it was compiled in the late 1870s.
Around then.
And that was the theme song for the White Australian Policy, which was introduced in 1901 to 1970, early 70s. And Aboriginal people wasn't even considered as... citizens until the early 70s or 60s or 70s.
Well, they weren't voting until around that time.
Exactly, so. That was considered fauna. But anyway.
I get that.
That was the theme song for the White Australian Policy.
Yeah.
Advance Australia Fair, meaning Advance Australia White. Because they weren't allowing the Chinese in here, they wasn't allowing the Polynesians in here, and blackfellas here, that wasn't even considered as humans.
I accept your view, 100%. I accept your view on that. Do you think that can affect a decision in boxing? If you have the wrong people with the sheet in front of them, is the reasoning I'm asking you. Can that sort of controversy before a fight affect people with a biro in their hand giving scores after each round?
Personally, I believe it can. Personally. That's not a personal note. But not just that. Not just what that. It's just what I stand for. You know, I'm a proud Muslim also. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said some stuff in the past that was probably raw, with the 9/11 stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't directed at the innocent people, whether what the media made out it was. You know, killing one innocent life in Islam is like killing the whole of humanity.
Mm.
You know, it's not on. You don't do it. You know what I mean? But they made out I was for the killings. I was for this. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, why are you killing other countries and going into other countries and killing all these other people? And it come back to bite you. Like, I'm not saying, you know, yes, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You should stop the killing, period. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I accept that too. That controversy in the way that it was played out, did that hurt your boxing career in America?
I believe so. But it's the media and the way they portray it. You know what I mean? Like, I just said it raw and truthful. I'm like honest dude, so I just said it raw and truthful. And I was, you know, I wasn't even thinking when I said it. You know what I mean? I was asked a question and that just came out.
Chalk, two of the three judges from last Friday night's bout against Danny Green were from the United States. Do you think your comments, dating back to 2001, still have a hangover effect?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I mean, it's big news. Like I said, I'm not for any killings. And when I went to America and fought, I fought over there in Vegas.
Is that McCart, was it?
McCart, yeah. I fought Bronco McCart over there. And I explained to him that, you know, it wasn't for the kill innocent people. It wasn't about that. But I think it could play a role in someone's feeling towards me.
Did you have to say that publicly before your fight in Vegas?
Yeah, well, I said I wanted to say it because I wanted to let them know, like, it's got nothing against America. You know what I mean? It's nothing against the innocent people. Like I said, killing one innocent person is like killing the whole of humanity in Islam. So it wasn't about the innocent people. It's just the politics, you know, around the world.
If I'm a devil's advocate right now, people listening, they'll be saying he just wants another fight. He just wants another fight with Danny Green. He wants another payday. He wants to get that done. There'll be other people who understand sportsmen. Leighton Hewitt played tennis for a long, long time. Many people calling for his retirement. A lot of golfers are still going around when they're cooked and they've got nothing left to give. But that's what they do. That's who they are.
Is that you?
Are you wanting to fight because you are a boxer and this is it?
I can fight for another 5 years. Easy. If I want.
You
being serious?
I'm serious. I mean, easy. I feel good, man. I just had my hip surgery. I feel like I'm 20 again. My movement is poetic. I feel good. I can bend the left and right. And it's only going to get better.
Do you expect to see title fights?
If I want. I'm saying if I want. But I really, it's not what I desire anymore.
What about your eye? Is your eye still play a role in you fighting?
No, my eye's good enough to fight. I mean, it's not as good as my right, but it's still good enough to fight.
So that's not going to impede you in bouts, in future fights?
No, I've been dealing with that for 5 years.
And it doesn't play a role in you favouring one side?
No.
So if two Fridays ago, the decision goes your way, 97, 93, like you were saying before, 96, 94, whatever. Like three judges all concur, bang, that's it. No more fights for Anthony Mundine? Would you have been happy?
Depending. If I got to win and do something historic like that, no one's done that before. Jump from super welterweight to four divisions. No one's done that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I would have done that and I got another big fight and a big opportunity, then I'd have to have a serious look at it.
Chalk, we know the world revolves around money and everybody wants to know what the purse was for the Danny Green fight. Can you give us a ballpark figure?
I don't even know myself, man. I mean, the money don't come in until, you know, they add up, they tally up all the pay-per-views and, you know, they get the gate. You probably know the gate the next day. But
how many people turned up? What, 27?
Something like that, yeah.
And there's no sort of ballpark figure. I mean, we were talking 3 months out from the fight that it was going to be a super fight of $30 million and then it was reduced to 10 and...
They didn't fluctuate, man. Nah. I really don't know, to be honest. Hopefully it's a good number.
where were the judges from? I'm intrigued by this.
Two
Americans, one Australian, and the referee was American too. I think he was the worst referee one of the worst referees that's ref me ever.
Was it Frank Garza?
I'm not sure his name, man.
They're patriotic types, aren't they?
Yeah, very.
Americans.
Well, maybe whoever was organising the fight.
I just wanted, like I said, Green just kept holding and hitting. He just kept holding and hitting. And let's fight. Let me fight him on the inside.
One more?
Let me fight him on the outside.
Perth at 83. One more.
I would gladly go there and beat his ass and prove it's not the weight. He's just not a better fighter. He's not more of a skilled fighter. I'm a superior fighter than him, and I will prove that in his hometown. And, you know, I can send him to bed, put him to bed. I'll put him in a leap.
Chock, Melbourne's the home of sport, as is SEN. So why don't we try and get it in Melbourne, make it another super payday, and I want you to send out one 10-second message to Danny Green right now before we go to the break.
I've got nothing to say to him, man. You know, he knows what's up. I got nothing to say to you directly and give him airtime off my mouth. I'm the man.
I want to come back. I want to know what you're going to do in the next 50 years, Chuck. I want to know that side of your life, what you got planned.
On 11.16 SEN, Anthony Mundine, the interview with Tony Sheehan and Mark Allen.
The winner by majority decision, the Green Machine, Danny.
Michael Buffer there announcing the decision. Just so people know, Paul Kent and his pedigree in watching bouts for a long, 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 long time said after the fight that Green didn't lay a glove on Anthony Mundine. Barry Michael, we all know Barry on this radio station, gave the decision clearly to Anthony Mundine, and Jeff Fenwick as well said that Anthony Mundine won that fight.
Marco, just before you go to Chock, those three names have all been fierce in their opposition of Chock for his entire boxing career, and people have said to me, if those three have Chock winning, Chock won.
I don't think there's any doubt about that now. I don't think there is. There's just been way too many people.
Three judges.
I want to talk about your next 40 years, because you've been this controversial figure, like a champion sports person, but there's been controversy.
Misunderstood myself. You know what I mean? It's not controversy. It's just I'm a straight shooter, man. I just speak the truth, right. And they make out it's controversy, but it's controversy when they want it to be a controversy. You know what I mean?
I believe, and you know, I talked to you before shows breaks, and I believe you want to bring everyone together, not isolate.
That's what I'm trying to do.
How are you going to do that? What's the plan? Cause I reckon after that Kessler fight, you had the whole country in the palm of your hands, and then it's left the track. It's left that track, but now we see, you know, you see people like Leighton Hewitt. They didn't like Leighton Hewitt for a long time. Now they love Leighton Hewitt. Now he's finished, and they hear him talking. They hear him talking the way he speaks about kids that he's trying to bring through. Can you be that guy? Can you be, once boxing is done?
I mean, that's
can
my
you bring everyone together?
That's my passion. That's my passion. That's my desires. After I finish my sporting sort of pedigree is to work with kids, mainly kids. I work with all, even adults that have, you know, that are fallen off the track and made the wrong choices, whether it's drugs, alcohol, whatever, and try and give them inspiration and give them guidance to back and support in order to make them fulfill, you know, their goals and their dreams.
That's on an individual basis, but I mean, you walk into a room, you light a room up, and I imagine you know that as well. You walk in anywhere, you could probably make a phone call and speak to people pretty high up in this country. How about, you know, that 40 years I'm talking about? It's a long time, 40 years. Do you have the energy to really have a crack at trying to bring everybody together? Because if that happened one way or another, if it's you and there's other people, there's other spokes in the wheel trying to do it, it could happen.
I'm just trying to make change for the better, man. Especially for the First Nation people, my people, the Aboriginal people. This is our country. This is our land. You know what I mean? And we've been getting raped and pillaged from the get-go, from the colonization of this country. I'm not saying that, you know, all, you know, non-Indigenous people are bad. Like, yeah, there's great people and that understand the plight and understand the oppressment from the system.
I think we all do. Yeah, you know, those early years must have been just horrifying. I mean, with the white settlement came here and what happened, you know, 200 years ago.
I mean, they fought for, you know...
Horrifying.
It's like a lot of people don't know the history of it. And there were warriors. There was Aboriginal warriors. You know, you have Pemulwuy, you have Windardine.
Yeah.
You have these warriors that fought and kept the off... Kept the Western people off them, you know what I mean, for a long time.
Yeah, I get it. And things 10, are changing.
For 10, 15 years.
Things are changing, though. Do you feel things are changing? I mean,
no, I don't feel nothing changing.
You don't?
The stats don't say it's changing. You know what I mean? Aboriginal got the worst health rate, the worst mortality rate, suicides. You know, they're dying before a certain age. Man, you know, words are just words. It's all about action. You know what I mean? They're still raping this land with mining and going into sacred sites and putting their billion-dollar mines up. You know what I mean? Take the coal and everything else to, in order to, you know, gas mining and things like that. And they feed the Aboriginal people crumbs. And they're making billions a week. You know what I mean? And the blackfellas are still living in shacks and in tin shacks and with all this poison around and poison water and this and that. You know what I mean? They don't give a damn, bro. It's all about raping the land, man.
Chock,
the land.
Chock, you are a passionate voice of the people. Have you thought about politics?
Maybe, man. Maybe.
Has anybody tapped you on the shoulder?
I mean, I don't know. I just want to make change for the better. And I want to bring our people, Aboriginal people, to the forefront where we should be. With the flag, with the anthem. Why aren't we recognised on that? Why aren't we with that? That flag, the Union Jack, that stands for rape, pillage, genocide to me. You know what I mean? And to my people.
Mm. Is there enough people in Canberra representing the Aboriginal people?
If they are, they're all jackies.
What does that mean?
Like, they're the yes men. You know what I mean? You need somebody that can't be poisoned. The heart can't be poisoned. Mm. You need somebody that's going to be strong for the people. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of talk about the British flag being taken off our flag, and I'm for that. I don't know why we've got a British flag on our flag. I don't get it anymore. We've moved down the track. What do you want? What would you like to see? What would help? In your view, what would help your situation?
It just needs to be a new flag altogether for the country. I mean, they're the two, the anthem and the flag are the two iconic pieces worldwide for our country. And yet, the first people and the Indigenous people ain't even recognised.
What colour would you like?
I don't know, man. They can come up with some colour, but it's got to be a lot more colourful than what it is. You know what I mean? I love yellow. And you can have red, you know what I mean? You have colours that are bright and, you know, glowing and make you happy, that give you a vibrant sort of feel, you know what I mean?
What about the anthem? Have you heard an anthem that you'd like? Is there something in the back of your mind you'd like to replace it? I mean, because that's spoken about as well.
I think you know what I mean. I think it would be the best, one of the best. You could change the lyrics a little bit, but I think it'd be one of the best songs that are for the anthem. My Island Home. Warumpi Band. Listen to that song, man.
Chock, do you know, speaking of Advanced Australia Fair, which you made such a reason behind not standing for it, and it was played before you actually entered the ring in Adelaide. Do you know many of your family and your people refused to stand when it was played in Adelaide?
Well, yeah, man. A lot of them did refuse to stand. A lot of the people... I'm not trying to divide the people. I'm just trying to educate the people. Because you're taught ignorance. We spoke about this before, Tons. You're taught ignorance, and you can unteach it. You know what I mean? And it's all about education. And knowing the truth behind the facts.
Mm.
You know, once you know the truth behind the facts, you can move in the right direction.
Yeah.
And so I was at the All-Star, the Indigenous All-Star game. And I didn't stand for the anthem. when I was getting played.
Chuck, just and to go back, this was in Newcastle on Friday?
On Newcastle on Friday night. And I swear to God, I saw more than 100 people on the stand. So at least I know I'm making effect because I'm making them aware, more aware, and talking truth.
And I mean this with the greatest respect, and you're within arm's length too, so
be careful.
Take what it is. Your delivery sometimes when you're standing up for your people can be misinterpreted as aggressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think that's a little bit?
Sometimes, like I said, sometimes I'm pretty raw. I'm just truthful. I'm to the point. You know what I mean? And I'm very passionate about our issues. You know what I mean? And sometimes my delivery can be being misinterpreted, man.
For the record, I think if you refine your deliver things, I think you could have a huge effect on this country, a massive effect.
Well, what we say as a Muslim is inshallah.
What does that mean?
That means God willing.
Chok, can you see yourself in a suit 5 days a week?
Nah, if I did go into politics, I'd rock up in shorts and thongs, man, kick back.
We're coming to the end. What are you most proud of in your life as a sports person and a man of Australia?
I'm just proud of me just being real. You know what I mean? Being real, not being fake, not selling out in any type of way, and just keeping it at 100 with the people. As we go, I just want to give a shout out to the Essendon legend James Heard and his family. You know, our thoughts are with him, and hopefully he can bounce back from what he's going through, man, and stay strong, my man. You know, you got a lot of support, and
very well said.
What's next? What are you doing? What happens now?
Well, I'm gonna get that bum in number 3 if he signs a contract.
Hey, Chok, just before we go to a break. Thank you on behalf of all the listeners and us here at SEN. Thank you for making your time available.
Listen, I forgot to say, I want to thank all the listeners, whether you're fans of mine or whether you're not fans of mine. You know, I just want to thank you guys because without you guys, we as athletes and we as sports people would be nothing, you know, for you to give your attention and you know, sometimes give your money to watch us perform. I just try to perform the best I can perform at any given night because I know people pay good money to watch it.
Anthony, thank you so much for coming down. I'm sure this will get to Anthony Green. Our listeners
to Danny Green.
Really enjoyed it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, my man.
Thanks, Chok.